time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
People have been saying there are too many mutual funds since the 80s.
For all the talk of smart beta, they haven't pulled in huge assets. The active managers are showing up in the ETF space.
Sumeet, great having you on ETF Prime today.
Thanks so much for having me, Nate. Pleasure to be here.
All right, so a lot we're going to try and cover. Let's maybe start with broad-based commodities. I was looking at flow so far this year into the largest commodity ETFs, and I would say overall they've been okay. The Invesco Optimum Yield Diversified Commodity Strategy, no K1 ETF, ticker PDBC, that's taken in over $1.7 billion so far this year. So that's had a great year. The iShares Commodity Select Strategy ETF, COMT, that's taken in close to $450 million. And then some of the other larger products like DBC have been less than that. But if you look at performance, at least compared to everything outside of U.S. stocks, broad commodities have performed pretty well. PDBC is up about 7%. What's your take on flow so far this year, and what have been some of the drivers of performance?
So let me start with flows, Nate. If you take the big picture and aggregate all the commodity ETPs, we're seeing about outflows of $1.2 billion for commodity ETPs as a whole, and assets under management of about $59.7 billion. So if we compare that to previous years, in 2017, for example, we saw inflows of $1.5 billion. In 2016, we saw inflows of $10.4 billion. And then in 2015, we saw inflows of $339 million. So the fact that we have modest outflows this year isn't that impressive for commodity ETPs as a whole, but a lot of those outflows are coming from the gold exchange-traded products, which have the bulk of the assets. So if you exclude those, it's actually been a pretty decent year. Like you said, Nate, the broad commodity ETPs have had some pretty decent inflows. And when we talk about broad commodity ETPs, we're talking about those that are capturing or trying to capture the entire commodities market, from energy to agriculture to metal, as opposed to ETPs that target only one specific commodity like gold or oil. Now, the broad commodity ETPs, I think they've been attracting interest for two reasons. One, that strong rally in oil prices that we've seen this year has spurred strong performance in the broad commodity ETPs because they tend to hold big positions in oil, and good performance is always going to get investors to take notice. Performance for the various broad commodity ETPs, it ranges pretty significantly because they all follow very different indices. Some are equal weighted, some are production weighted, and that's going to have a dramatic impact on returns. But they've ranged anywhere from a 12.7% gain for something like the IPAT, S&P, GSCI, Total Return Index, ETN, ticker symbol GSP, all the way to a 2.8% loss for the actively managed First Trust Global Tactical Commodity Strategy Fund, ticker symbol FTGC. That said, there's more commodity ETPs that are up this year than are down. So that's definitely, you know, attracting the interest of investors. And the second thing I'll say is that a lot of investors may be focusing on commodity ETPs now because there's a lot of talk about being late in the business cycle, and commodities, they tend to do well late in the business cycle as companies operate close to maximum capacity, pushing up the demand for raw materials.
Sumeet, any thoughts on why PDBC has been the leader in flows this year in terms of broad-based commodity ETFs? Do you think it's the no K1?
That's a good question, Nate. I mean, it's been an impressive flow story this year. For a fund that started with something like $740 million in assets to then go and take $1.7 billion in 10.5 months, that's nothing short of impressive. I think we have something like $2.6 billion in assets under management now in PDBC. So that rivals DBC as the largest broad commodity ETP on the market now. But it's really hard to say exactly why a product like this is suddenly getting so much traction. I mean, it's been around since 2014, so it's not a new product by any means. But I think, like you said, Nate, the no K1 factor is playing a part in that. It saves a lot of headache and paperwork come tax time. But the bigger benefit, I think, is the expense ratio. We talk about it for ETFs in general, but investors are very cost conscious. So the much lower expense ratio on PGBC of 0.59% compared to some of the other commodity ETPs that are out there, like DBC, which has a 0.89% expense ratio, I think for long-term investors, that's the bigger factor.
Going back to performance, as you mentioned, obviously oil has been a big driver in terms of the broad-based commodity ETFs. But, you know, it's no surprise if you look at the top-performing ETFs this year, there are actually quite a few oil-related ETFs on that list, something like the Invesco DB Oil Fund, DBO, or the largest oil ETF, the United States Oil Fund, USO. Those are up 25-30%. Can you talk a little bit more about the specific drivers of oil? I know it's taken a dip recently, but overall it's had a great year.
Absolutely, a very strong year. I did a piece on the top-performing commodity. I'm sorry, the top-performing ETFs in general a couple of weeks ago, and eight of the top 20 were oil ETFs. So very strong performance there. And I think that's because, you know, we're seeing really strong demand for oil, you know, that's thanks to continued growth in the emerging world. But you're also starting to see supply strains by the economic crisis in Venezuela, for one, and also those upcoming U.S. sanctions that are going to hit Iran. That's crimping supply, or I'm sorry, exports over there. So I think over the last 2 years, Venezuela's oil production has dropped something like half by half. And then Iran's exports just in the last few months are down 40%. So you put those two together, really tight supply and robust demand, which for the first time topped 100 million barrels per day this year. That's creating a situation that the International Energy Agency is calling a very tight oil market. And the International Energy Agency, they put out an estimate for spare capacity in the oil market. That's basically how much oil that countries can quickly bring online to make up for any disruptions. And they say that's equal to only 2% of global demand, which is a very low level. So this is a market that's very prone to supply disruptions. And we are getting those disruptions in Iran and in Venezuela right now.
Well, the other interesting thing, too, here is if you look at the oil ETPs that invest in futures, the futures curve is in backwardation, right? And this can apply to any commodity ETP that uses futures contracts. Do you mind briefly explaining the benefit of backwardation?
Sure. And this is a great example of backwardation and the impact it could have on commodity ETFs. If you look at the U.S. benchmark, West Texas Intermediate for oil, WTI, it's up about 19% this year. But the largest oil ETF that tracks WTI, the United States Oil Fund, ticker symbol USO, it's up 26% this year. And that is because of the backwardation. So backwardation, it just describes the situation like now, when near-month oil futures contracts are trading at higher prices than later-month oil futures contracts. And that means that when oil ETFs roll their futures positions from one contract to the next, they sell at the higher price and buy back at a lower price. And that results in a net gain that adds up over time. We call that the roll yield. The opposite situation, which tends to occur a little more often, it's called contango, and that's when near-month futures contracts are trading at a discount to later-month futures contracts. In that case, oil ETFs sell at the lower price and buy back at a higher price, resulting in a loss or a roll cost. Generally speaking, when traders are nervous about securing supplies, oil tends to trade in backwardation. And when markets are flush with supply, contango is more typical.
We're visiting with ETF.com, Sumeet Roy. Sumeet, lastly, I do want to go back and talk a little bit about gold. So I feel like gold has reacted somewhat oddly this year. It just hasn't done what maybe investors would have expected. Now, my pet conspiracy theory is that cryptocurrencies are impacting gold, maybe a little more than people think. But in any event, Gold did react well to last week's sell-off. It was up close to 1.5%. You mentioned the outflows from gold ETFs year-to-date. Anything else noteworthy you're seeing in terms of ETF flows or any thoughts on the price action in gold?
Yeah, it's been a pretty disappointing year for gold, Nate. I think year-to-date, I last checked, we're down about 5.8% on gold. Like you said, that is up from the worst levels. I think we were down 9% in September. The thing about gold is there just hasn't been much of a reason to own it. Interest rates are going up, as everyone is well aware, and economic growth in most of the developed economies has been steady, if not better than steady, like here in the U.S. So that sapped a little bit of the safe haven investment demand that's become a really important of overall gold demand in recent years. So we do see that reflected in the ETF flows. The World Gold Council, they put out a monthly survey of flows into and out of ETFs. And according to them, about $1.4 billion has come out of physical gold ETFs year to date. But there's some divergence depending on the region you look at. Most of the money, $3.1 billion, has come out of North American, specifically U.S.-listed gold ETFs like GLD, for example. On the other hand, in Europe, we've actually seen net inflows of $1.9 billion into their gold ETFs. But still, overall investment demand has been waning globally, but it's not just investment demand. The World Gold Council also said that overall demand, which is going to include jewelry and demand from central banks and things like that, is actually at the lowest level since 2009 this year. So whatever it may be, you know, whether it's Bitcoin taking demand from gold or whatever the case may be, it sure seems like gold has fallen sharply out of favor this year. But finally, I'll say that, you know, I have to wonder whether, you know, now with gold still out of favor, is the time to be buying gold? Because if you consider it an insurance policy, you want to be buying insurance when it's cheap, right? Rather than chasing it, you know, when something bad happens and then gold runs up. So from that perspective, investors may want to take a look at gold ETFs now.
No, I think you make a good point. And we always say gold's one of those asset classes that just marches to the beat of its own drummer, right? It's really tough to predict what's going to be the specific catalyst. But if you look historically, certainly it served as a good crisis hedge. And, you know, some will argue it's been a good inflation hedge. Any thoughts on the price cut from Granite Shares on their Gold Trust ETF ticker BAR bar? They cut the fee last week from 0.2% to 0.1749%, which now makes it the lowest cost physical gold ETF on the market. Right, it's cheaper than the Spider Gold Mini Shares and the Perth Mint Physical Gold ETF, which launched earlier this year. Both of those are at 0.2%. Do you think we'll continue to see this sort of back and forth on gold ETF fees?
It's funny, Nate. Like you said, you had Granite Shares, you know, make this fee cut. But the story is that, you know, they were the low-cost option in the gold space when they debuted in August of last year, I think at 20 basis points. For the fee. Then those two competing products came out, GLDM and an AAAU, and they undercut BAR with an 18 basis point fee. So Granite Shares comes out earlier this month, and they slashed the fee on BAR to 17.49 basis points, reclaiming the title as the lowest cost gold ETF. Now, on the surface, all this maneuvering basis point here or there, it seems kind of ridiculous. But when you look at the evidence across the ETF space, and you know this, and because I'm sure you talked about it on the show, investors care about every basis point when it comes to fees. I mean, you had BAR accumulate $285 million in assets pretty quickly by being the lowest cost gold fund. So it's no surprise that they want to keep those assets flowing. And by reclaiming that title, it kind of helps them do that. It's just another sign that, you know, the ETF UR is still very much going strong. It doesn't matter what asset class or segment of the market you look at. Investors like these lower fees, and ETF issuers are all too happy to accommodate them.
So do you think this might start a trend where we see fee cuts made in the thousands of basis points?
It wouldn't surprise me, Nate. I think whatever it takes, the ETF issuers are going to do that. And, you know, I think it's going to resonate with investors. If you're the lowest cost ETF in a segment, whether it's half a basis point, even half a basis point, I think, you know, investors are going to take notice, and that's going to help attract assets.
Well, Sumeet, with that, we'll have to leave it there. Great perspective on commodities and commodity ETFs today. Look forward to chatting again soon.
Thanks again, Nate. Pleasure to be here.
That was ETF.com, Sumeet Roy.